the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now, we've often heard that remote working could be something that benefits our environment. We're joined by a woman who is fully immersed in that world. Dee Coakley is the founder and CEO of Boundless, a tech company that sorts out tax, employment laws and other issues for companies that have employees working overseas to make sure they're staying on the right side of all the relevant legislation. But it's a very different business to the sector she started out in, the music industry. Before that, she then moved into tech. Dee, you had an interesting career path to get to this point. From Roscommon originally, growing up, was music a big thing for you? Did you play music?
I did play music. Now, nobody on the planet is ever going to pay me any money to play music for them. But I did grow up playing music.
The tapes are stashed away somewhere, are they?
Yeah, I don't think that's my retirement fund. But my dad is a fantastic musician. And my brother is also a great musician. So I grew up in a house full of music.
And do they play traditional music or what kind of music?
My dad would play some trad, a lot of folk music, blues, things like that. He can play anything with strings. He plays a whole plethora of different instruments. My brother played in punk bands for years. So very different. And for me, when I was in my teens and my 20s, I was very interested in electronic music. So we covered all of the bases, all of the genres in our house.
So when it came to music, was obviously there in the background, but you went to DCU and you studied business. So you obviously had an interest in the world of business. But you headed off then to London.
I did, yeah. I've lived in many different countries over the years. So did brief stints while I was at college in Boston. I spent time in Reykjavik in Iceland, believe it or not, working in an Irish pub one summer. Then I moved to London. I was working in the music industry, knew that's what I wanted to do, and knew there would be more opportunities in London. So that's where I headed.
So what kind of a job did you get? How did you make that happen?
So I generally was in marketing and commercial management roles.
Was that for record labels or agents or...?
Record labels and artist management, yeah.
So what kind of stuff do you have to do there?
Well, I worked with a company called the Sanctuary Group for many years, which is now part of Universal Music. So I spent time working in the record company, time in artist management. I worked at tour production, which was a lot of fun. I worked with some amazing artists. So the company was founded by Iron Maiden's managers. So Iron Maiden was a really key act for us.
So would you have
a lot of work with.
Met the,
yeah,
a lot of these people? The Iron, what were the Iron Maiden guys
yeah,
like?
Yeah, Nico McBain used to come in, and Bruce Dickinson used to come into the office all the time and sit and chat with us, generally
like
about football.
They were like quiet puppies as opposed to the public image, was it?
Oh, I don't know about that now. Nico's a big personality. No, the conversation was generally always about football, often about his kids' football. And I worked with Beyonce, who was an amazing artist to work with. She was, you know, really had built a really successful career at that point. And
she must have had a whole large team of people
she did.
Around her.
She had a lot of family working for her. So I worked fairly closely with her cousin, a guy called Alan Floyd, who was her tour manager. Her dad was her manager at that point in time. And the company I worked with acquired his company. So that was interesting.
So once you mentioned there about tours, it all sounds very glamorous, but I'd say it's pretty hard work, long hours, and a bit stressful.
I'm laughing when you mention that. I always say I love hiring people from the event sector. If people have worked in any form of events, they can handle stress, they can work to a deadline. When I worked at tour production, I used to always say, you know, the show, the date was in the diary, the tickets were sold, the show had to happen. The load-in has to be done, the stage has to be up, and everyone has to be ready to go. And it is great experience. It's so different to what I do now, but great life experience.
Are artists difficult to be around and to work with?
It's often the people around them, I think. Some artists are difficult. You know, I worked with Morrissey. He has a reputation for not being an easy man to work with. But often it's the PAs or the managers.
Did you experience that? What was he like, Morrissey?
I mean, he's a man that likes things the way he likes them.
That's very well put.
He will always have his list of demands when he's playing a show. I mean, this was years ago. This was the very early 2000s. We're talking about nearly 25 years ago. And he used to always insist that no meat could be sold at the venues that he was playing. Now, I think nowadays people would, a lot of people would probably think that's a fairly reasonable request. But back then that was very unusual. And he'd be playing huge stadiums and all of the vendors would have to remove all of the meat that they would, you know, usually they'd be selling a lot of burgers and hot dogs.
But would you be the person who'd have to break the news to the venue or the vendors that this
often.
Is how it's going to be?
Difficult
conversations.
Difficult
no
conversations
doubt.
For sure.
And along the way, was it always in the back of your mind as you were getting more responsibility in these companies and in these roles, was it always in the back of your mind that you'd like to start a company of your own?
When I've always been very involved in the tech community from my early days being involved in software businesses. And people often used to say to me, oh, well, obviously your next step will be to start your own thing. And I used to always say, oh, God, I couldn't do that. And I believed I didn't have what it would take. It seemed extremely intimidating. I was a COO for many years. And that leap, and it is a leap from the COO role to the CEO role, felt insurmountable to me. And then I worked with a woman CEO, and that really did change things for me. It was a really male dominated industry until very recent years. So in the early days when I worked in tech and I would go to events, I remember going to Mobile World Congress in Barcelona and sitting, having lunch one day, and the Fira in Barcelona is an absolutely vast, vast space. And I remember sitting, looking around, and there were hundreds of people within my eyeline, and there was not one woman in the software
space. So working with that woman CEO helped you with confidence?
Absolutely. You know, they always say you can't be what you don't see. And suddenly it clicked with me. I could relate to that. And I thought, well, this is an extremely talented woman. She has plenty of skills I don't have. But actually, I could see myself sitting in that chair, and that really changed things for me.
You would have gone in to raise money for Boundless as a female co-founder and CEO. What was that like?
It's definitely challenging. I mean, all of the stats and the data show that women's experience of raising funding for their tech businesses is very different to men. Less than 2% of venture capital funding goes to women-led businesses. We have been really lucky at Boundless. We've secured some fantastic funding. We've raised a little over 5.5 million euro. I mean, that is a splash in the pond compared to a lot of our competitors.
And inevitably, before you have those successes, I'm sure there were some pitches that didn't work out.
Oh my God, there are hundreds of pitches that didn't work out. Yeah, I mean, I've literally pitched to hundreds of investors over the years.
And were they all men?
That's changed a lot. So I always led fundraising at the three businesses where I was COO. So I've been pitching to investors for 16 years. Now, when I started pitching to venture capital funds 16 years ago, there were not very many venture capital funds in Europe. There was a handful of them. I was based in London, but there were very few. That's changed. There are now thousands of venture capital funds.
And at that
funds.
Time, would you have felt in the middle of it that somehow the gender issue is in the room here?
Absolutely. I mean, one of my male colleagues used to always say, every meeting you go to with a VC, there is one woman in the room. Her job title's always analyst. She says hello and then she sits and takes notes. And that was a woman's job in a venture capital fund. You know, I'm not that old. This I'm talking 15, 16 years ago. But that's really changed in the last 5 or 6 years. But the realities of investment into women-led businesses is lagging.
So you were in tech, you were in various management roles. Where did the idea for Boundless come from?
So my co-founder, Emily Castles, she's Irish, but actually lives in Chamonix in France. She was my first ever internationally remote employee at a business called Bizimply that I worked at quite a few years ago. At the time, it was really tricky to figure out, this person is going to France. How on earth do I figure out their payroll? What kind of employment agreement should I have them on? And started talking to I had a big COO network in London, started talking to people there and asking them how they were solving this problem. This was around 2017, 2018. And across the board, everyone I spoke to said, this is a nightmare. And I started to think, maybe you could build a solution in this space. Maybe there is something that could be done here with software that would make the customer experience a little better.
And then you could offer that to various clients who want to hire people abroad and just make it all more straightforward. And
exactly,
that was it.
Exactly.
And then COVID came along and everything would have accelerated because this whole concept took off and lots of international workers moved home temporarily to the country of origin. What's it like now? Is it still growing? Is there still a big appetite among clients? Are they still very keen to hire people on such a remote basis?
So the market is growing all the time. There are more and more people being employed internationally remotely. Now, on an individual company basis, there are companies that have offered remote work to people and then rolled back. And I think we'll continue to see that. Different leaders have different preferences for how they run their teams. And you, as you'll see changes in senior leadership at organisations, you will see shifts and changes in how they want to lead those teams and where they want people based. But it's growing and it will continue to grow because there, if you go and speak to the early stage startups at any of the accelerator programs now, you'll find almost 100%. I would say, you know, my gut instinct on it, talking to people in those situations, I'd say it's about 85% of companies now are remote from day one.
At the start of this, I'm sure there were employees who thought, I'm going to head off somewhere nice with a nice climate. I'm going to go to Spain. I'm going to go to the south of France for a few months or maybe a year because I'm effectively working remotely anyway. And if they just did that without doing it on a kind of a formal footing, could they find themselves in trouble?
They certainly could.
On the tax front, on all of these fronts.
Absolutely, yeah. And it does happen that employees do this without being transparent with the company that they're working at.
I can't come in today. I'm living in Italy.
Well, also, if a company is operating fully remotely in the belief that everyone is in the same country, if you're not bringing people into the office with regularity, it can happen that people, not everyone in the world is an honest person. Not everyone's fully transparent. But it's, you know, it's really problematic because if as an employee you're doing that, you're in a situation where you're breaking the law and the company you work for is breaking the law.
It's a kind of a brave new world for employees, the idea that they could be living in one country, which might be where they're originally from, but effectively working for someone somewhere else. But from an Ireland economic point of view, we're used to having these big companies announce 300 jobs and 400 jobs in Ireland. And then a lot of them might not be in Ireland now. It might be only, you know, 30% of them or 40% of them.
Yes, that's true. But you also have to remember that there are all of these jobs in Ireland that are not getting announced on the radio. Ireland is one of our more popular countries. So we have huge numbers of workers working remotely from here for French companies, German companies, Canadian companies, obviously US companies.
So it cuts both ways.
It cuts both ways, but you don't get the press releases about these jobs here.
And is it difficult when we saw a couple of years ago the software sector went through a little bit of a slowdown and big companies were letting people go? Is that something that you would have seen and you'd be very aware of?
Absolutely. We had to make some layoffs. We were hoping to fundraise at that point in time. It was extremely difficult to fundraise in 2022. Don't know many people at all that closed funding rounds that year. And when you look at the data, it just went off a cliff. And there are a lot of startup software companies out there now that raised huge money at huge valuations, and they are still trying to get to profitability. We've been profitable for quite some time now. And that's a really difficult shift to make. If you've raised a few hundred million and you have a huge team and huge costs to just keep the business ticking over, that road to profitability can be really challenging. So there will be a lot more casualties.
You think there will be?
Yeah, there will.
Particularly out of software.
Yes. But yeah, there are a lot of companies struggling for sure.
And what about the future? Where would you like to take the business if you imagine, I don't know, 5-7 years from now?
Yeah, so I you know, certainly, although we've just talked about the challenges of 2022, 2023, there is definitely more of a sense of optimism now in the software space. We have seen huge growth throughout those periods. So we grew 250% last year, 200% the year before. So we've been on a very high growth trajectory.
And I assume with all of these people working in different locations remotely in different countries, you could live and work wherever you want to as well. It's that kind of company, and that's the one you're running. You live in Dublin, so you don't go somewhere warm for the winter.
I don't. I have a dog, which keeps me a little bit tied. But I am a little tempted, I have to say. And this year I am thinking that maybe in the new year I may go somewhere for a little bit to escape the grey skies. Yeah.
Well, Dee Coakley, founder of Boundless, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you.